Good afternoon. You're listening to KFSK News for Monday, January 20th. I'm Olivia Rose. The Sitka Fish and Game Advisory Committee is recommending the Alaska Board of Fisheries close Promisla Bay to commercial herring fishing, reversing its previous vote on the proposal. Proposal 179 was submitted by Steve Johnson, with the intent to protect an area that has become increasingly important to the subsistence harvest of herring eggs on branches, a traditional food for the Thlinkit people. The proposal was first reviewed by the advisory committee in November. At the time, the committee was evenly divided. Then, in December, it rescinded its vote in order to revisit the proposal. At a meeting earlier this month, it reconsidered the proposal with some new information. Lauren Sill is a subsistence program manager for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. She said data collected from traditional harvesters showed Promisla Bay in recent years is making up a bigger share of the subsistence harvest.
Prior to, maybe 2016, 2017, somewhere around there, a lot of the harvest was not documented up in this northern portion of Sitka Sound, but it's become more common over the last few years. I think we've documented more harvesters going to that area, partly because of where herring are spawning. You know, during 2017, 2018, a lot of herring didn't spawn. There wasn't a lot of spawn in the, traditional core area. A lot more of it was up in the northern sound, and so that got a lot of use up there.
Over two dozen members of the public joined the meeting to voice support for the proposal, including traditional harvesters from Sitka and surrounding communities. Joel Jackson is the president of the organized village of Cake. He said Cake relies on Sitka's subsistence harvest to supply herring eggs for tribal citizens.
We used to get our own spawn here years ago until the state opened up the winter herring bait fisheries. And they did that pretty much all over Southeast, and it completely almost wiped out our herring in our area. It really hurt us, and we had to start depending on other, like Sitka and Prince of Wales, to get our herring eggs. It's a very important subsistence food to our people.
One commercial fisherman said he opposed the proposal, and some members of the advisory committee voiced frustration with the process of revisiting the issue after it had already been voted on. Ultimately, they voted 10-4 in support of the proposal. The Sitka Advisory Committee has spent months reviewing fishery proposals and preparing its recommendations for the policymakers, the Alaska Board of Fisheries. Advisory committee support can give a proposal more weight, but it doesn't guarantee the board will give a proposal the green light. The Board of Fish meets in Ketchikan later this month. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is poised to be the country's new Health and Human Services Secretary with the Trump administration. If confirmed, Kennedy has pledged to advise all U.S. water systems to remove fluoride from public water. A growing number of cities in the U.S. have already done that on their own, and residents' teeth offer a preview of how that policy could affect dental health nationwide. Juno pulled fluoride from its tap water nearly two decades ago, and as KTOO's Clarice Larson reports, data shows kids in Juno are getting more cavities.
So dry, dry, dry. And paint, paint, paint.
Dr. Yvonne Tijerina Burleson uses a tiny toothbrush to paint topical fluoride on a patient's teeth.
Simple, with some amazing benefits.
They're at Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium's dental clinic in Juneau. The patient chose marshmallow flavor.
Yeah, it smells really good. These would be great candles.
Candle scents.
Applying topical fluoride is a typical practice for most dentists across the U.S., but in Juneau, it's an especially critical one. That's because it hasn't been in the water for nearly two decades. And since then, data shows kids in Juneau have started getting cavities at a higher rate. Dr. Dane Lineker directs dental services for the Search Clinic.
Fluoride has a karyoprotective effect, like it can prevent cavities. It can slow down the disease process. Fluoride can help remineralize and strengthen the teeth.
Around 70% of the U.S. population has access to fluoridated tap water. Dental experts and studies say it helps prevent cavities.
fluoride, if you're not getting it in the water system and it's not getting incorporated into your teeth that way, this is another way that it basically gets painted onto your teeth.
Public health officials say putting a small amount of fluoride in the water supply is an easy and cost-effective way for large-scale cavity prevention. But some researchers and critics, like RFK Jr., argue it may lead to health issues. RFK Jr. says fluoride is industrial waste and associates it with issues like lower IQ in children. Now, there's some evidence of that at high levels of exposure, but not at the level that goes into U.S. water supplies. There's conflicting narratives, but one thing is clear. The U.S. is seeing more and more cities opt out of fluoridated tap water. About two decades ago, Juneau residents overwhelmingly voted to remove fluoride from the local water supply. And if Juneau's dental health now is any indicator of what's in store for cities that might follow RFK Jr.'s advice, America could be seeing a lot more cavities.
I think Juneau offered us a good example of some of the challenges we set ourselves up for when we decide to stop fluoridating the water.
Jennifer Meyer is a public health researcher who conducted a study that shows that kids in Juneau have needed more dental work since they stopped getting fluoride in the water.
Places that are going to cease fluoridation, just hold on to your pocketbook because it's going to get expensive.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention would agree with that claim. Her study focused specifically on the teeth of children under 6 in Juneau. She used a set of Medicaid dental claims to get data for nearly 2,000 kids, a decent sample size for a small town.
What we know happens is over time, you start to see kids with more and more decay and some with some really advanced decay.
Her study found that when the water had fluoride in it, kids had an average of 1.5 cavity-related procedures per year. But once it was gone, that went up to about 2.5 procedures a year. Her Juneau-specific study's conclusion is not far off from what other researchers say. The CDC calls the fluoridation of drinking water one of the greatest public health interventions of the 20th century, attributing it to averting millions of cavities in the decades it's been implemented. The American Dental Association shared a statement this fall that endorsed water fluoridation, saying there's clear and compelling evidence around the benefits of it. Still, not everyone is convinced. David Hamm is one of the advocates who wanted to remove fluoride from Juneau's water. He doesn't have a problem with fluoride on his teeth. He has a problem with drinking it.
I used a fluoride toothpaste, and then I could spit out the toothpaste and not swallow it and ingest a questionable substance into my body.
He sees the value in fluoride, but argues that it can be administered in ways other than putting it in the water supply. But not everyone has access to regular dental care or fluoride pills. Health officials say fluoridated water is especially important for kids in vulnerable populations.
We all want to have a silver bullet solution to a problem, but there isn't, because life isn't like that. Fluoride, this fluoride issue is not like that. There are steps you can take that don't involve telling everybody to, you know, drink fluoride.
Now, no one in Juneau drinks fluoride. It's an all-or-nothing situation, and the city's experience shows that when people have to opt in to use fluoride, it can lead to more cavities. In Juneau, I'm Clarice Larson.
Last week, the Alaska Department of Health confirmed a measles case in an adult on the southern Kenai Peninsula. An unvaccinated adult developed symptoms of the extremely contagious but preventable viral infection earlier this month while traveling to Alaska from overseas. That's according to a public health alert from the state's health department. South Peninsula Hospital reported through a press release on Friday the patient went to Homer Medical Center before receiving care at the hospital's emergency department. Public health nurse Tammy Marsters says early measles symptoms are similar to cold and flu symptoms.
Measles typically starts with a fever, runny nose, cough, red eyes, and a sore throat, which, of course, is what everything else starts with, right? And then it's followed by a rash. Most frequently, that starts on the face and descends to the trunk and limbs.
Marsters says measles symptoms usually start to appear 8 to 12 days after exposure to measles. A rash typically shows 10 to 14 days after exposure. People are generally infectious 4 days before and after a rash appears. According to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, measles is highly contagious and can quickly spread in populations where more people are unvaccinated. Because measles can be potentially life-threatening, the CDC recommends vaccinating to prevent outbreaks. In 2024, 40% of reported measles cases in the U.S. resulted in hospitalizations for treatment or isolation. Marsters says complications are most common in children under the age of 5, adults over 20, immunocompromised people, and pregnant people. She says the best way to protect yourself is to get the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine.
Vaccinate. And if you're sick, stay home. And if you feel that you were exposed, watch yourself carefully for signs and symptoms.
She says to call a provider ahead of time before seeking care at a clinic. Governor Mike Dunleavy's staff says it hasn't heard back from the Trump transition team about his Alaska Federal Transition Report, a 27-page wish list the governor sent to the incoming president just after his election. One of Dunleavy's top priorities is a request to reverse all Biden administration policies that restrict oil development. Dunleavy also calls for ending federal management of subsistence hunting and fishing and a complete return to state management. The governor's position on these issues is not new, but as KNBA's Rhonda McBride reports, the prospect of a new president puts them in a new light.
When the governor floated some of these proposals in the past, opponents didn't take them seriously. They said they amounted to political posturing. State Senator Donnie Olson says some of the oil development proposals might help his district on the North Slope, but he's worried about Dunleavy's push to return fish and game management to the state and do away with the Federal Subsistence Board. He recalls the bitter debates in the legislature in the 1990s that failed to reconcile state and federal laws and ultimately led to a dual system of fish and game management.
What I want to do is look forward and continue to move Alaska forward. Last thing I want to do is go back to those type of days.
The Dunleavy list of priorities also asked Trump to reverse Biden administration policies for Alaska on land into trust and native allotments. If that happens, that might squash the Aklutna tribe's plans to build a small casino near Anchorage. The Alaska Federation of Natives has been working on a response to Dunleavy's request to the Trump transition team.
We just want to see a structure that works for Alaska Natives.
AFN's President Ben Mallott says much of what Dunleavy wants goes against resolutions passed at last fall's AFN convention that seek to strengthen Native access to hunting and fishing.
We are reviewing it, making sure that our communities, our organizations, our tribes have a seat at the table. A lot needs to be laid out to really make sure that it recognizes our Aboriginal continuing fishing rights.
Mallott says it's also looking through the proposals to see if there might be common ground. Some of the governor's supporters praised him for reaching out early to Trump and identifying Biden policies that might quickly be reversed by executive order. Dunleavy asked Trump to issue some of these on his first day in office.
Let Alaska be Alaska and reach what we're destined to be.
Mike Porcaro is a conservative radio talk show host and an ad agency owner who sometimes works as a consultant for Dunleavy. He says Trump and Dunleavy are friends, which will help the governor with his wish list.
He's a big fan of Alaska, and he wants to see Alaska achieve everything that Alaska could possibly achieve, because I'm sure that he said, gee, how can we help?
The governor's list also asked for Trump to reinstate federal support for the Ambler Road and to reverse the ban on roads through the Tongass National Forest. He also asked Trump to create a cabinet-level task force to address Alaska issues and for consultation on key administration positions that affect the state's resource development. When asked for comment, Dunleavy's spokesman Jeff Turner said the plan speaks for itself. In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
For KFSK, I'm Olivia Rose.